you can win a scholarship to Mark Dawson's acclaimed premium course, Facebook Ads for Authors, by spreading the word about this podcast. Visit selfpublishingformula.com/contest to enter. Hello and welcome to podcast number 4 from the Self-Publishing Formula.
Two writers, one just starting out, the other a bestseller. Join James Blatch and Mark Dawson and their amazing guests as they discuss how you can make a living telling stories. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
We're having a ball, aren't we, Mark, doing this podcast?
Yeah, it's been great. Some of the people that we've spoken to have been really inspirational, and I hope that listeners have, well, first of all, enjoyed the first two episodes and the income report, and that they're going to stick around for some really great content coming down the track.
It's the whole podcast world is brilliant for people. It's such an empowering thing for entrepreneurs, for people in specialized industries like ours. And it's effectively like, you know, a few years ago, these would have been quite expensive consultancies, wouldn't they? You would have gone to a big guy who's busy and picked their brains about what they were doing and gleaned what you could from them in these sessions, perhaps gone to a seminar and traveled to do that. And now, you know, it's all in our back pocket on our phones, and we're really delighted to be able to embrace this technology and impart a lot of information. And that's what we're doing today.
Exactly, and it mirrors what we've found so far, and what we hopefully will be able to do today is just kind of mirror the giving spirit that has always been part of the self-publishing community. Ever since I started writing, 4 or 5 years ago, started to learn how to do things from podcasts, from bulletin boards or forums, and other writers. It's always been a case of helping hands extended. No one pulls the ladder up after them, and that's not something that we're going to do. We're going to be providing as much useful and actionable information as we can through interviews and through the kinds of masterclass type episode that we're going to look at today.
Yeah, so we've called today's episode The 5 Must-Do Actions for New Authors. So these are going to be 5 very actionable, important steps that you've got to take. Now, this is beyond, obviously, writing your book, although we're going to talk a little bit about the book and what sort of product you should have on the shelf. This is going to be more to do with your practical setup, your approach to marketing, and your mindset as you move forward from being a writer to a marketeer.
Yeah, and I suppose the target here would be typically for people who are at the start of their career, but it's always helpful, I think, and I do this all the time, just looking back at the systems that I've got up and running and the kind of practices that I'm engaged in, just to make sure that everything is optimal. So there may be some tips in here that established authors can implement that will make things more efficient, make their processes more professional, and in the long run sell more books.
Okay, so Mark, what is the number one tip if we move on to the list now?
Yeah, okay, so number one, I mean, the obvious thing, which we're not going to touch on, we'll talk about craft and the book itself further down the line. So we'll just assume that listeners have a book that's ready and ready to be sold. The first thing that people need to do is set up their mailing list. So I get asked this an awful lot. What's the first thing that I should do as a new author? And it is that, set up a mailing list. And I can illustrate that with reference to an example from real life. When I started publishing successfully, I'm not entirely sure now, the dates kind of run into one another, but 4 or 5 years ago, I had a book out, my first self-published book called The Black Mile. And I did a promotion with Amazon on KDP. It was one of the free promotional periods that you could and you still can use with KDP when you're exclusive to Amazon. I had a 5-day period, I think, and put the book up, boosted it with an ad from, I think it was from Freebooksy, and I remember really vividly, it was in August, I think, I went for a bike ride and just took out my phone whilst I was having a rest to see how many copies had been downloaded, and it was something ridiculous, like 40 or 50,000 had been downloaded in a few days, and I had an initial blast of euphoria, which probably lasted about 30 minutes, and then it was kind of all right, so that's great, but I haven't got any other books for people to buy, and more importantly, I've got no way for them to and no way for me to get in contact with the people who have enjoyed the book and wanted to hear more news from me. So I didn't have a mailing list, I had no calls to action at the front and back of the books, and I probably lost about 6 months worth of head start by just going into that unprepared, which was frankly unforgivable, and it wouldn't be a mistake that I'd make again.
Well, let's touch on a couple of those subjects there. First of all, let's talk about this, and there's no way of sugarcoating this. We've had it from several different sources, and it's been your experience as well. In an ideal world, you do not go to market with one book. You can do it, and you can start your mailing list building, but in an ideal world, when you're writing your first book, you think about either breaking it down into a short novella and followed by another novella, or you think about the first two or three. And we've had this repeatedly from quite big authors who've been successful in this field, and obviously you felt it back then when you had all these names, one book and nowhere to go at that stage.
Yeah, it's optimal is to have more books. I don't think it's essential. I think it's reasonable to put one book up, provided that everything else is switched on. So you've got a mailing list. You may not have a reader magnet at that stage, so that's an incentive for someone to join the list. But I wouldn't, if I had a book finished, I personally wouldn't wait to write the other one or another couple, although that some people will do it that way. I think it's reasonable to put the book up, but just make sure that everything is aligned and you're ready to exploit traffic that's generated and people buying that book, enjoying it and wanting to know more about you and your other books.
Okay, and my own, I've taken this from some of the people we've spoken to and from seeing how the system works, and I think I am veering towards trying to break my initial novel into at least two. And I was quite inspired actually reading one of your John Milton novels, I think is a perma-free, at the beginning of your box set. I mean, it's the North Korea one. It's short, it's pithy, it gets you into the guy. In fact, I quite like the fact that you don't give too much away. You don't really know who this guy is, apart from what he's doing. And that, for me, was a really good hook to get into your series, and not too much writing on your part, really.
No, it's about 20,000 words, and that wasn't the first book that I wrote. I actually, the Cleaner was the first book, and then I think I'd written Saint Death and The Driver. So the first three novels were written and available. And it was only when I decided that I wanted to give something away as an incentive for people to join my mailing list. This is when I started to get really serious about building my list, that I went back and I actually wrote that book. I was on holiday in Spain. So over the course of a week.
Not put on your own.
No, I didn't go there. My daughter at the time was having a kind of a 2-hour nap at lunchtime. So I wrote that in about 10 hours over the course of that week, or at least most of it. I got it edited, got it professionally prepared, and then I got it up online and started to use that as my reader magnet. So, I didn't do it first. It was something that you can do after the fact. If you're able to kind of drop three at once, and wonderful, you're gonna do pretty well, provide everything else is correct. But, it's not essential. You can do it the other way around.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into one or two other nitty-gritties of the mailing list then. So MailChimp, AWeber, there are various email handling programs around, but we would definitely recommend using one of them.
Yeah, I mean, out of those two, I mean, there's about five or six I could recommend, from really complicated, feature-rich applications like Infusionsoft, Entreport, ActiveCampaign, things like that, slightly beyond what new authors would need. I think it's completely fine to use MailChimp or AWeber. MailChimp is free up to 2,000 subscribers. Once you hit 2001, you're going to have to start paying. But I would recommend paying for it slightly earlier, because you'll want to use some paid features, and in particular, you'll want to use automation, which is probably something we'll cover in a bit more depth later on, autoresponder sequences and funnels and things like that. But
I mean, there is a way, isn't there, of having an auto response. You use the welcome email, and that's a cheeky way of getting a little bit of automation in for free on your list. But that's good for your initial book giveaway, but it's not good for nurturing the campaign, nurturing your readers afterwards.
No, that's right. You can use that. It is a good hack. But I mean, MailChimp is not an expensive, particularly expensive piece of software. I think it's like 10 or $15 a month at the lowest level, something like that. It's pretty reasonable. So you can use it for free until you get established, but I wouldn't wait too long to kind of jump to the paid version, because it's more powerful. You'll get more bang for your buck. The same goes for AWeber. It's exactly the same kind of principle, with the same kind of considerations you'll need to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I use MailChimp. I've liked it a lot, actually. It's one of those programs. It's not massively intuitive the very first few sessions you have with it, and but don't be despondent. There's some really good training. They do a lot of good video training tutorials themselves on MailChimp. We've got a little bit of training on it coming up as well, but there are ways of finding out what you're doing, and quite quickly it'll become second nature to you. AWeber I'm not so familiar with, but I understand from the people who use it that it's not too dissimilar, and again you can get into it. But all of these things, it's part and parcel of that journey, of that switching, you know, whether it's morning to afternoon that Joe Penn and Mark and other people we've spoken to do, or your own routine. You do need to be a writer at one point and then move into your marketing, and this is part and parcel of that. You mentioned Mark's signups at the front and back of the book. Just explain to me, because this is something I haven't done and don't know how you do it. How would you do that?
Okay, so when the book is finished and you've got your Mobi file, or well, your EPUB, your Mobi, whatever format you're exporting into, probably both, you'll want to have a sign up at the front and the back of the book. So most people will tell you just put a sign up at the back. And what a sign up is, it will be a quick message to the reader that will say something along the lines of, I hope you enjoyed the book. If you'd like to get X free item, so it could be a novel, a novella, or something else, and we'll get into magnets, reader magnets, a little bit later on, probably in a different podcast, I guess. You need to advertise that and give them a URL to go to sign up for the item that they're interested in. So definitely put it at the back. I would also recommend putting something at the front. So it doesn't need to be the full message. What I do is I have a quick line that says something like, if you want to, if you'd like a free novella, just go to the sign up at the back of the book. The reason I don't have the actual URL there is because people can see that link when they use the look inside on the Amazon product page, and you might start to lose sales by people just seeing that link and signing up. So think about that. On the other hand, if you can do it the other way around, I'll say this many times as we go through these episodes, James, but a subscriber is always going to be worth more to me than a single sale, because I can sell books plural to a subscriber, which is going to be worth more to me than just one sale. So always focus on getting subscribers. That's going to be the bedrock of your business.
Okay, and I remember you saying in the past that one of your regrets is you didn't have a mailing list at an earlier stage in your indie career.
Yeah, it was a stupid error. I just it was one of those situations where I was running perhaps a bit too fast before I could walk, and didn't have, I perhaps even didn't know at that stage that it was important. So I certainly lost a little bit of time by and probably a few readers by not getting going early on. But you know, I've made up for that. I'm looking at about 40,000 to 45,000 subscribers now. So it's something that you can recover from if you haven't done that originally, but best practice is definitely to get that down as a priority right at the start.
Okay, well, let's talk about the readers then, and how you employ them. And you've talked here about a launch team. And what's an ARC or ARC?
Advanced reader copy. So this is definitely a subject we'll go into in much greater detail, how to launch books. But there's probably half a dozen podcasts in that subject alone. But what you can do when you start to build up your list of subscribers is you can kind of graduate some of them, the really keen ones, into positions whereby they can have a really direct effect on your career. So you can send ARCs, advanced copies, when you've got a book that's ready to launch, it's been proofed, edited. You can send it to your advanced team, and I use them for kind of beta reading, so they'll pick up errors that have slipped through the editorial process. And also, you can use them to lay down early reviews once the book goes live. That certainly helps to convert cold traffic coming to your Amazon page or your Apple page. That's good social proof to get reviews up early. And the more reviews you can get, it stands to reason that the greater number of sales that you're going to have, all other things being equal. And that's something that you can definitely start to influence with the launch team. Yeah. That was one of the things that it was a key thing for me last year. I used to, for the last couple of years, when I started doing this, it was so difficult to get reviews, and it was a bit of a chicken and egg. You needed sales to get reviews, but you couldn't get sales without them. So, you know, it's what comes first. It was really complicated. I struggled for ages to get that fixed. And building that advanced team has been the way that I've done that, and it's been amazing. And that those people have become my friends as well, which is a lovely side benefit.
And the social proof you talk about, and the way that your books appear on Amazon to people who are browsing, obviously having those stars and having those reviews is incredibly important. We all use those a lot for almost all sorts of products. Is also behind, under the bonnet at Amazon, algorithms are running in terms of how they place your listing in search results and so on, and those reviews are important there as well, aren't they?
Hard to say. I suspect reviews have a factor to play in that, but no one knows how the Amazon algorithm works precisely. I've spoken to people at Amazon, and I know they don't know either. There's probably one guy in a smoky basement in Seattle who understands exactly how it works. I think it's fair to say that they probably play a small part in the algorithm, but what they definitely do play a role in is if people can search genre pages and use review number of stars, average stars as a filter. So you're going to be filtered out if you don't get reviews up for the book. And also when you're launching, you can get onto kind of hot new lists and best reviewed lists, all that kind of additional useful real estate. Just another place to put your book cover. It will definitely be a situation where the more times it's visible, you know, obviously the more sales you're going to make.
Okay, so that is number one of our five essential things to do. Have a mailing list, start to build it, consider the mindset of giving something away to build it. So if you've got this idea that this first novel you put so much time and effort into it, the last thing you'll do is going to give it away, you do need to move on from that, because actually giving it away, getting those names and getting those readers is going to set you up for the next few years.
Yeah, it's absolutely essential. So yeah, definitely focus on that.
Okay, let's move on. Number two of the five actions for new authors, website.
Yeah, so you need a website. It's not absolutely essential. It's not something that you have to have before you can start selling books, but you do need eventually a bit of the internet where that you can kind of stake out your ground. So it's your own little home on the internet where people will be able to find you if they start searching for your name. And I noticed that now Google's a very big source of traffic to my website for people searching for either John Milton, Beatrix Rose, or me. So I find that quite a lot. Once you've got books, obviously you can start to link directly from books to the relevant platforms. And you can start to generate affiliate income because you'll have affiliate links linking out from your website, and you'll get commissions when sales are made, which is it can become quite a useful source of additional income.
Can you just explain the affiliate process for those of us who are uninitiated in this dark art?
Yep. Affiliate links are really useful. They're, apart from being a useful source of income, they also enable you to track the effectiveness of your various marketing techniques. So the income side of things first. If you go with Amazon and you use their affiliate system, what happens is you'll get a link which is typical, similar to a normal link. We'll have a little bit of extra code at the end. And what that code does is leave a cookie on the browser of the person who has clicked the link and gone through to Amazon. And if that potential customer then goes through and actually makes a purchase on Amazon, and it doesn't have to be the ebook, you'll get 7 to 8% usually of the cover price or the price of the item. So it's great when it's $3.99 ebook. That's going to be an additional 8%, say, and bring your royalty up to nearer 80% rather than 70%, which is a very useful bonus. But it really comes into its own when around Christmas time people start buying $2,000 or $3,000 televisions. I found last year I had a real boost of income from that affiliate source that was probably significantly more than I was actually making from book sales right back at the start, the first 18 months of my career. So we'll get into affiliate linking and how to use all that in another podcast, because it's quite a big subject. But it's you'd certainly be using those links on your website, and you'll start to earn a little bit of extra money, which will grow over time.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the top line here is that the website is your presence. It's the foundation for a lot of your traffic that's trying to find you. And without that, you're restricted to them finding your sales links on Amazon or someone. So it's definitely something that's going to be a part of your marketing strategy.
It's a fundamental part. I mean, it's the alternative is what I call digital sharecropping. So you don't necessarily want to grow your crop on someone else's land, which is exactly the case if you're relying on Amazon or Google. The things can change, and they do change all the time. So the one constant thing is the website that you control. So, and another really important part of that website and that presence is you're going to have an opportunity to sign up for your mailing list. So we're tying back to that first item. If you look at my website at markjdawson.com, the first thing you'll see is a sign up opportunity to join my list. And you see a graphic of the books that I give away. A very, very simple subscription process, all linked in with MailChimp. Very easy to set up. But I'm adding about 75 readers a day at the moment just through that link. So it's, you know, it's even if 50 of them or even if 70 of them don't actually turn out to be long-term readers, if 5 of them do, right, and their typical value to me is $20-$25, it's not difficult to work out how, you know, how much money that can generate over time.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's move on to number 3 of the 5 must-do things for new authors. What is that, Mark?
That would be social media presence. Obviously, there are plenty of social media platforms out there. Facebook, probably the biggest one right now, certainly the one that I focus on the most. But Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you could count YouTube as social media for this purpose. Lots and lots. I could even mention Google Plus, although probably won't spend too much breath on that. but lots of different opportunities to kind of develop your presence across those broadcast mediums. My advice would be to pick one or maybe pick two, and Facebook for me would be the first one. Now that might be because I know it best, and I'm known now as being kind of an authority on advertising on Facebook. But it's not, you don't, even if you're not ready to advertise, you should definitely have a Facebook profile, I think, and a Facebook page. So just quick explanation of what that is. The Facebook profile is where is the first thing you'd set up. You go onto Facebook the first time, you set up a profile. It's where your friends and your family will link to you. It's where you'll kind of browse through funny pictures of cats, all that kind of stuff. It's that kind of the social part of things. But the business part is the actual Facebook page. So you should definitely set both up. Set the profile up, takes 5 minutes. Setting a page up takes about 30 seconds. So you just go in, set up a page, you'd call it whatever you want. I think mine is called Mark Dawson Author because that was the best that I could get, and I couldn't get Mark Dawson. But it's very simple. It takes no time at all to do that. But because you have that, you'll then have people being able to sign up to become fans of your page. You'll need a page if you start to advertise. You can't advertise through a profile. It has to be through the page. It's kind of low-hanging fruit. You know, you're going to be getting people finding you on Facebook, finding you on Twitter. You want to be ready for them. Make it as easy as possible for them to sign up to your list. You know, and Facebook can, I know this is kind of digital sharecropping as well, but for me, Facebook is a great place to gather readers together. You can have groups. Facebook groups are really great. It's just another place for people to find you, learn about you, interact with you. That's very important. It's a place where you can demonstrate that you're a real person. You answer questions. You know, you let your personality shine through. It's a really, really simple way to do that. And, you know, of course, you can kind of run that and monitor that through your phone now, which is what I do most of the time. Just, you know, take 5 minutes whilst I'm in a queue and just answer, you know, questions from readers. Makes queues go a lot faster, I find.
Okay, so we've got our mailing list, we've got our website, we now have some social media presence. Numbers 4 and 5 to come. Number 4, Mark.
Yeah, this is something I was, again, this is the theme for this episode. I was late to get this sorted, and you have to treat it like a business. So, I think it's important that is done very early on. One kind of expression of that would be, for me anyway, I was running as what we'd call in the UK a sole trader. So I was just basically running it as Mark Dawson. That was the tax entity. I was a tax entity for the first few books that I wrote. And that's not a very tax efficient way to get the money out of the business. You're going to be paying full tax on that. Which was, you know, I had a full-time job at the time, so I was paying full rate of tax in the UK. It just wasn't a very effective way to get that money out. So what I did about 2 years ago was to set up Unputdownable Limited, which is my writing business. The copyrights for those initial books were transferred into the business, and everything that I wrote from that stage onwards was run through the business. So all of my royalties now go into the business, commissions go into the business, any income comes into Unputdownable, and then I have a accountant that we speak monthly talking about money that's coming in. I'm at the level now where I like to have a kind of a monthly bird's eye view of how healthy the business is and which channels are working better than others. So he produced me a monthly report, and then at the end of the year we'll look at the most tax efficient way to get the money, to pay the tax obviously, but to get the money out again. So I'm not, this isn't a question like, I'm not like Jimmy Carr for non-American, non-UK people wouldn't maybe not have heard of that, but
it was a comedian who was creative with his tax affairs, let's put it that way.
There've been a few of those. So it's, you certainly pay the tax that's due, but don't pay more than you're supposed to pay. So and be efficient about it. So it's certainly more likely to be tax efficient to run income through a company, certainly in the UK, and probably the case in the US as well. But I would certainly say look into that early on. It doesn't have to be expensive to set a company up, and it just makes things easier than a situation whereby you might suddenly be quite successful and then you have to start trying to retrofit things, and it doesn't work quite as simply if you have to try and do that.
Is there anything specific about the you talk about the incorporation, the tax status? In terms of having that business overview, I mean, having an accountant, I think, is very, very important, because every now and again, an accountant will say to you, do you know what, you're leaking money here, and they'll spot something that you don't spot, like an old subscription or something. So, you know, what's this for? They challenge you a little bit just to clarify where your money's going. That's always healthy to have an extra person have a view on that. Some people might do that within their marriage, if they have that sort of marriage, where their wife might be a partner in the business and they can do some of the books as well. But it's having that, seeing it as an independent entity and having that business mind, and we would advise that right from the outset, so that you treat this as a business with an income that needs to grow.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the way I look at it is assume that you're going to be successful. So it's easy to think, as you're sitting down with no people on your mailing list, just writing the first book, and it's easy to assume, and let's be honest, the odds are against you making a lot of money from this. It's still a difficult thing to crack, but people are managing to do that, and more people are making good livings out of independently publishing these days. So I think it's healthy to assume that you're going to be successful, and with that assumption, just think about what you would do to maximize the benefit that would bring to you. So a really easy way and a really straightforward way is to just set up your affairs in a tax efficient manner right from the start. It's easier to do at the start than later on.
I'm really enjoying this checklist, particularly as a new author. It's getting me shipshape, I think. So we are coming on to our final point, our fifth point, Mark.
Well, let's just finish off the fourth one first.
Oh, sorry.
we've skipped one for understandable reasons. I think no one likes talking about this kind of stuff, but we're not going to be around forever, but our copyrights will. So a copyright is going to last for the lifetime of the author plus 70 years on top. So when I shuffle off this mortal coil, I'm going to have at least 23 books if I'm hit by a bus tomorrow, but hopefully 50 books by the time I stop writing. And those copyrights will extend for another 70 years in the UK. I can't remember what the status is in the US, but I think it's similar. And I've got two kids, and I want them to benefit from those copyrights for as long as possible. So a really sensible thing to do early on, and this isn't just writing advice, it's, you know, it's something that everyone should do anyway, but we all put it off. And I'm a lawyer, right? And I haven't done this, which makes me an idiot. But
you sound like a lawyer when you're talking about this subject, though.
I know. It sounds like I'm about to offer a free will writing service, but no, it's very sensible. Everyone should do this. It doesn't take very long, and it's not expensive. But you should set up a will. So again, none of this is legal advice, and I haven't been a lawyer for an awfully long time, so I'm rusty to say the least. But if in this country, at least, if you don't have a will, then kind of, if you die intestate, then certain provisions kick in that might mean that your assets don't go to the beneficiaries that you want them to go to. So it just makes a lot more sense, and also it's more tax efficient as well to get that sorted out right away. So I would say just if you go and see an accountant to incorporate your company, then maybe pop into a lawyer as well and just say you want to set up a simple will so that everything is understood, straightforward, and provisions are in place should the should something unpleasant happen.
Yeah, I think your children are definitely making themselves known on the subject of what's going to be left to them. Shouting loudly in the background, we can hear them. But
yes, they've just come back from nursery and they'll probably be in the office in a minute. So
that's what it's all about, though, isn't it? And your family's important, and it's the easiest thing to, I know I'm going to sound like a lawyer now, it's the easiest thing just to put off and put off and put off, but it's important to get done.
Come to Blatch and Dawson.
Yeah, Blatch, Dawson and Dawson. Okay, excellent. And I like number five. I'm looking forward to getting to number five. Number five is...
Yeah, it's just be super professional. So, I mean, it is kind of connected to treating things like a business, but be super professional. So there are some, I'd say kind of as a general position, what I look at now, and I wasn't always like this, in fact, I was very far from this in the early days, is I want my books to be indistinguishable from the traditionally published books that I'm competing with. So Lee Child sells a lot more books than I do, but when it comes to, we occasionally share space on the Amazon bestseller list. So, you know, I might have a John Milton book with a Jack Reacher book next door to me. And I want readers to, first of all, look at those covers and not be able to tell which one is traditionally published and which one is independently published. And should they buy my book and they start to read it, I want them to be impressed with the formatting. I certainly don't want them to find any typos or errors or anything like that. It's just everything needs to be absolutely tip-top and sorted out so that it's an identical experience. In fact, better, let's be honest, there are all kinds of errors these days with traditional books as well, so I certainly don't want to be any worse than a traditionally published book, and I have high standards and I want to be the best. So that means certainly paying a cover designer. I am absolutely awful when it comes to that kind of artistic endeavor, and I know I am, so I certainly wouldn't be trying to put a cover together on paint. And believe me, I've seen plenty of authors try to do that and they always look absolutely awful. So not cheap, certainly not cheap to get that done, but you can use companies like 99 Designs. You get a cover for $300 from them, but if it means saving up a bit, you should do, because you're spending a lot of time on getting the book out there. It would be awful to send it out in clothes that have holes in them, to use a really terrible analogy. So certainly spend a bit to get the cover right, and the same goes for editorial. I would say, at the very least, it needs to be proofread by someone not connected to you. So when I started writing independently with the Black Mile, I thought I was, I'm a lawyer, so I have an eye for detail, or so I thought. I thought I could do the proofreading myself. Now, I discovered, to my horror, as the reviews started rolling in, pointing out that it was full of errors. And a few readers would contact me with PDFs and details of the errors that they found, and they were right, they were all there, and it was just a case of being completely word blind. So you'll discover this when you finish, James, after you've got to 60,000 words and 70,000, and you've read that three or four times during the writing process, you will miss errors. It's absolutely guaranteed you'll miss them.
You can't proof your own writing.
No, it's impossible. Are you accusing me of something there, James?
You can't prove your own writing.
I can't prove my own
capital
writing.
Capital Y.
No one can.
One cannot proof their own writing.
One cannot. So I was slow to this, and I actually went back and paid someone to edit all of my Milton books. In fact, they've been edited about three times each. And generally speaking, I still occasionally get people saying there's errors, which is very annoying given that I've gone through that process. But you definitely have to have that mindset. It's not good enough to just try and do it yourself. because it's just not going to work. And the problem with that is those, if you go look at the Black Mile or the Cleaner, the first Milton book, and you scroll back to the first reviews, you'll see reviews that say 2 stars, full of errors, and Amazon is not going to take those reviews down. I'm not even going to try and ask them, because it's just not going to happen. Those are always going to be there. Unfortunately, I've been able to kind of cover them with reviews saying that they like the book, and you know that there aren't errors, all that kind of thing. But those reviews will always be there, and it's a really good reminder for me personally to never cut corners like that, because it's a false economy.
Okay, and on the subject of covers, which you mentioned there briefly, and perhaps not going down the DIY route if you're not comfortable with it, we are going to have on a future podcast Stuart Baish as a guest, and Stuart will give us does your covers, Mark, and there's a few others in the industry. He's done some John Le Carré covers. He's worked in the industry, the trad industry, as well as independently. He is brilliant to talk to, just in terms of the approach of the atmosphere of what you're trying to create and say with a cover, his personal approach, and also some tips on those people who are more comfortable with using perhaps Photoshop and InDesign or whatever to create their own covers. So that's coming up in a future podcast.
Yeah, Stuart is a genius, and you know, Stuart will do you a cover. There are plenty of other people who are getting into that space now, and as more and more writers see the light and start to publish themselves, the industry grows around them. So it's reasonably easy now to get a really good pro cover without, you know, getting a second mortgage to pay for it. But it's definitely something that needs to be done.
Keeping yourself focused, as when you're in this super professional mode and everything's going to be well polished and going to look good and, as you say, be indistinguishable from the old trad industry stuff, how do you make sure that you are making the right choices in terms of what you do with the book and where you put it, etc.?
I think the kind of the key thing to always bear in mind is just your mantra should be, you want to reach new readers, you want to entertain them, and then you want to keep them. So that should always be your focus. So ignore fads. If you go onto forums right now, go to K-Boards or any of the other forums where writers hang out, you'll see quite a lot of people complaining about Kindle Unlimited. So they complained about Kindle Unlimited when the first iteration came along. It was, you know, the KU apocalypse. They then started to complain when KU2 came along and they started to pay for pages read rather than borrows. And, you know, there are always going to be things like that. Amazon is always innovating. They're always going to be introducing new things. You know, things will change. New players will come on board. Some will fall away. As we're recording this today, Nook announced that they're not selling in the UK anymore. So things are always going to be changing. But the one thing that is going to be constant is you're providing content, you're telling stories, and you want to find the best way to get your stories into the hands of readers who are going to be prepared to pay for those stories, and then, you know, we'll be sticking around with you for the long haul. So as you produce different stories, you get new books out, they're always going to be around to support your career. So that's going to be your focus. I've seen too many people writing books designed to take advantage of things like KU, and it's just stupidity, because things will change. And all those people who wrote dozens of short books to take advantage of KU number one, version one, when you're paid by the borrow, they don't look quite so clever now that KU two has come around and its pages read and not books borrowed. So, I'd say just focus on the main thing, and that's telling stories and getting them into the hands of readers.
Being super professional, a really good way to round off these 5 essential tips for people starting out. Mark, thank you very much. As ever, your experience and your wisdom in this area is valuable to us who are starting out today. We have got a great guest in our next podcast. I'm just going to tease you with that. We have Sean Platt, who is engaging, compelling, energetic, a polymath of our age and a man of many podcasts. It really is not an interview to miss. So we're looking forward to Sean, and we're looking forward to talking to you again. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
And don't forget, you can win a great prize by helping spread the word about this podcast. Visit selfpublishingformula.com/contest to enter. The prize on offer is Mark Dawson's acclaimed paid premium course, Facebook Advertising for Authors. a course which isn't available to anyone at the moment, by the way. It also includes Twitter advertising for authors, with further modules to come, including YouTube ads for authors. And you can give yourself more than one chance to win. Just pop along to our dedicated page at selfpublishingformula.com/contest.
You've been listening to the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. Visit us at selfpublishingformula.com for more information, show notes, and links on today's topics. You can also sign up for our free video series on using Facebook ads to grow your mailing list. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. We'll see you next time.